The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.
It sounds too good to be true. That is real. You know, you just sign up here, here, and here, and the initials there, and you're going to save, again, 5, 10, 20% on your bill. Heck, you know, the majority of our customers at Solar Simplified in Illinois are saving 50%.
Are you speeding the energy transition? Here at the Clean Power Hour, our hosts Tim Montague and John Weaver bring you the best in solar, batteries, and clean technologies every week. Want to go deeper into decarbonization? We do too. We're here to help you understand and command the commercial, residential, and utility solar, wind, and storage industries. So let's get to it. Together, we can speed the energy transition.
Today on the Clean Power Hour, growing community solar. I'm Tim Montague, your host. Check out all of our content at cleanpowerhour.com. Please give us a rating and a review. And check out our YouTube channel. We have a wonderful YouTube channel. You can contact me at cleanpowerhour.com or find me on LinkedIn. You know, as you energy professionals are well aware, community solar is a growing and important niche within the energy transition. And today we have an expert on that topic. His name is Aviv Shalgi. He is the CEO and co-founder of Solar Simplified. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Great to be here.
I love that name, Solar Simplified. We all want the energy transition to be simpler and easier. And we truly have all the technology we need to make the clean energy transition. It's just a matter of deploying it and getting it out there into the market. But you have a unique business because you're a B2C, a business to consumer, but you're also a B2B because you get asset owners to utilize your platform, which is a subscription management platform. And we're going to hear about that. But Aviv, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. You're a serial entrepreneur. How did you become an entrepreneur, and how did you find your way into the energy transition?
Great question. How did I become an entrepreneur? I changed careers 5 times, trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. And to be honest, I kind of stumbled into entrepreneurship. A friend of a friend of mine was starting a new company. I was looking for somebody to join him at the time, and our mutual friend was the one that made the introduction. We kind of liked each other. It's kind of like a business dating of sorts. Liked each other, liked the ideas that both of us wanted to kind of were interested in at the time. This is almost 15 years ago by now. And just started our first company. And since then, I fell in love with the ability to help solve interesting business problems that I see out in the world.
And what was that? What was the industry you were in originally?
So my first two companies were in advertising, but it was technologies for advertisers. So most of our customers were kind of the big advertisers of the world, Disney and Netflix and Spotify and Hulu and Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because we're talking, again, 15 years ago, there wasn't a lot of technology on how you run advertising online.
Right.
You know, and so that was kind of my first, you know, dipping the toe into the entrepreneurial world. And, you know, I just figured that creating something from nothing is something that I'm passionate about, especially if it's a problem that I see people are struggling with. And that kind of, you know, just appealed maybe to my how I was born, how I was raised by my parents. You know, it just felt like a challenge.
And what was your educational background?
So I studied electrical engineering in college, even though I didn't really practice that, at least not when, you know, in our industry right now, this type of electrical engineering. I was a hardware designer. I designed chips for Intel, again, about, 15 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. So never had to deal with, solar and power lines and transmission and all sorts of this, this type of stuff. But I did take a few classes in college about this, so kind of a good segue.
Yeah, electrical engineering is a great background for the solar industry. And I can see how software for advertising is applicable to subscription management. What was the ideation though behind Solar Simplified? When did you start the company and why?
Yeah, so we started the company in June of 2020. So we're almost at our fourth anniversary. To be honest, the original idea wasn't anything related to the solar industry. The original thinking, or like the hypothesis we were trying to figure out if we can find something interesting in, was everybody around us are being furloughed because of the lockdowns of COVID. Mm. Everybody thinks that the world's going to end. Is there a way for us to help people save money? That was it. Like that was the starting point. And, through a lot of kind of ideas, brainstorming on the wall, and one of the things that we stumbled on was the idea of community solar. You subscribe virtually to the solar power plant. The solar power plant's real, but you don't connect physically to it. You have to live, let's say, kind of close to it,
right?
Depending on the state that you live in and the regulation, the specific regulation, but up to a few hundred miles, let's say.
Yep.
But as a subscriber, you sign up and you get to save 5, 10, 20% on your monthly utility bill. And we thought, well, that's a great idea. We're able to help people save money. All of us, are, obviously for the energy transition and cleaner energy and creating local jobs and stuff of that nature. So we're like, okay, this is kind of the holy grail. We can get a lot of things that we aspire to do to the world, or to help the world with, all at once. And so we're like, okay, this is an interesting industry. I think the actual story of how we got to start Solar Simplified was interesting because, even when you think about ideas, in my personal entrepreneurial philosophy is you should not start companies just because of an idea. What you should do is go talk to your customers. Well, we actually found the customers before, or the customers found us before we actually started the company. I live in Chicago, and Chicago was under heavy lockdowns in kind of the beginning of 2020. And there were all of these startups that were doing professional networking, i.e. Zoom calls with other professionals around the country. I did a few hundreds of those because I was bored. Chicago was locked down. I sold my previous company in the end of 2019, and I really didn't have a lot to do. And so I probably had 400 or 500 of those calls, just 2 or 3 a day for a few months. Very fast, I got to meet a few developers and a couple of asset owners in this industry. Mm. And they were all complaining about the same things. They were complaining about the fact that they have to put in a lot of money before the asset even exists into acquiring customers. So they're paying money to acquire customers for something that's not there yet. And for many developers, they're kind of cash constrained. They don't have a lot of money sitting on the sideline just, waiting for things to happen. So that meant that if they have to put in whatever, anywhere from $100,000 to $1 million per project up front, that's money that they can't put into a new project that they might be able to develop. Same goes for asset owners. It means that they have to prioritize some projects over others. They can't execute and build as fast as they would like to. The second thing they were complaining about is even when they do pay, some of my competitors, and I have great competitors, I love most of them, but some of them, or at least those that existed back in 2020, you pay them the upfront fees, but there's a misalignment of incentives here because you pay them for the services they're providing, not for the results that they are providing. And so it's kind of like almost like an outsourcing arm of sorts. You're just hiring a bunch of people, but you're not giving them a W-2, and you don't have to give them, you know, donate money for their 401k and all sorts of stuff like that. And to me, that's a little strange. Most industries in the world have figured out that you want to pay for performance. You want to pay your partner because of the results they're getting you, not just for being there. And so for me, that was like a little bit strange.
Let me make sure I understand. You're referring to the subscriber who is being offered a promise of savings, but the savings are not realized until they actually get the contract rolling. Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm talking about the subscriber managers that existed back at the time.
Okay.
They were kind of like an a la carte menu at a restaurant. A developer and asset owner was, at least back then, coming to them and saying, I want ABC, I don't want XYZ. And for every little thing, you pay extra. I want you guys to answer customer calls. That's going to cost you extra. I want you to send them a bill. That costs you extra. I want you to replace people that, you know, churn, people that, you know, you acquired subscribers. Some of those subscribers have left. I want you to reacquire new customers. Okay, that's going to cost you extra again. Everything was costing extra. And even when you acquire customers, let's say, that's the simplest example, you acquire the customer as the subscriber manager. Let's say it's 100 customers. 10 of them are not paying. Well, the losses of the lack of payments is on the developer. It's on the asset owner. It's not on you as a subscriber manager. At least it wasn't back then. To me, that's insane. You trust me to do a job. Excuse my French. I screwed up. Mm-hmm. But you're going to eat the losses and I'm still going to get paid. That's a huge misalignment of incentives here, that I'm getting paid no matter how I do my job or how good I do my job. And you, the person who contracted me, the developer, the asset owner, the lender, you're taking all of that risk that I'm going to do my job well, or maybe I'm not going to do my job well, you know? And so to me, these two things sounded just insane. There's an imbalance of power here. Mm-hmm. You know, developers, asset owners are paying all this money. A lot of it is upfront. And there's still no guarantees of performance. And they're taking all of the risk. And so we said, well, let's flip this on its head. You know, we're interested in the industry because of the savings to subscribers. We're interested in this because there's an imbalance of power and misalignment of incentives. We think we can solve this because at the end of the day, subscriber acquisition companies, subscriber management companies, we're marketing and billing companies. Mm-hmm. You know, we are not really solar companies. We're marketing and billing in the solar industry.
Right.
We're helping the energy transition, but we're not causing, let's say, the energy transition. And marketing and billing are things I've done in previous companies as well. And so I figured, well, why don't we do the same things we've done in the past, just replicate it to a different industry?
Yeah. So you realized that there was an opportunity to improve the experience for the asset owner primarily?
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say primarily. It's the asset owner on one side, the subscriber on the other side. Mm-hmm. We simplify both of these. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll give you an anecdote on the subscriber side. With most of our competitors, even today, if a subscriber wants to sign up, and different states are different, but I'm going to generalize a little bit, it'll take them somewhere between, let's say, 10, 15 minutes at the fastest to, you know, maybe a few days at the longest if they want to sign up. With us, it takes anywhere between 2 to 5 minutes. So, you know, just that time frame of having to wait a few days, which happens a lot here in Illinois, where I live, unfortunately, where with many folks, it takes days to sign up. Days. That's insane in 2024. You know, with us, it takes only a few minutes. So that's a lot of the simplification, you know, on the subscriber side. On the developer asset owner side, much of the simplification is the fact that we take our risk on ourselves and we shield developers, we shield asset owners from our mistakes. Now, if the sun wasn't shining, I can't help you there. It's that's beyond my control. But if we didn't acquire subscribers fast enough, if too many subscribers have churned, if subscribers are just not paying, heck, if the utilities are not paying in consolidated billing states, we're still going to make the asset owner whole, the developer whole, the lender whole, whoever contracted us. They're going to be made whole, and we're going to be, let's call it, losing money unless we do our job well and we fix things. And so
that does sound too good to be true. In the pre-show, we were talking about how your customers often think it sounds too good to be true. So
it does, but it's only because they got used to, you know, and I'm not disrespecting anybody. Listen, I'm very good friends with folks at Arcadia, at PowerMarket, at Ampion, et cetera, et cetera. We have a lot of great companies, a lot of great people in this industry, which I really love. You know, I want to wake up and like talking to people, you know, not just my customers, but also my competitors. And we all work together a lot on policy and driving the industry forward and stuff of that nature. But it's just a different concept. I mean, paying for services is something that usually happens at very infant industries because nobody's willing to risk anything. Nobody knows what's going to happen. That's what happens with every new industry that comes up. But I mean, community solar has been around for what, 7, 10, 12 years at some states even?
Yeah.
You know, it's not that new anymore. We kind of figured out some statistics, you know. We know how what the average churn in the industry is for, you know, for mass market customers. We also kind of figured out what the churn for low-income customers is, what it is for commercial customers, what's their statistics on people paying, on people not paying. And I we didn't mention this before, but all of my businesses, even though they're in different industries, the theme, the underlying theme between all of them is data analytics and machine learning. That's kind of background, what I bring to the table. And, you know, 2024, the last 12 months have all been about AI. You know, most of AI is not really AI, but it's a really nice buzzword. But there's a lot of data out there that, you know, for example, Solar Simplified's using in order to improve these statistics. So we'll be in the clear. We won't be at risk by taking these, you know, but by taking these commitments or these guarantees to our developer partners, asset owner partners, and saying, we're going to shield you from these losses because we don't have these losses because we're using data a lot smarter from the get-go. Who we target, what's the targeting, what's the messaging, what do we tell them, how we onboard subscribers, et cetera, et cetera. And so we're happy to take those risks. But to your point, it sounds too good to be true, simply because the rest of the industry hasn't offered these things yet.
Okay.
But they will. You know, it'll take another 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, but every industry that gets to maturity gets to these balances of power. The imbalance of power right now, it's just an anomaly.
Yeah. Let's work our way through the stack here. You have consumers, you have utilities, and then you have asset owners. And it all has to work together. The money has to flow seamlessly, ultimately, for us to have a good community solar industry. And not all states have good community solar. It is very regional. We happen, you and I happen to live in Illinois, which has a quite a robust community solar program. But if you just Google that problem, show me a map of the good community solar states, you'll see that there's about 10 places where there's robust community solar, and then there's a bunch of other states where there's kind of one-off and nascent markets like New Mexico, which has a pilot program, and you know, eventually that'll go bigger. But New Mexico is also quite a small state, a million, maybe a million and a half people. So there's not a lot of runway there necessarily. There's more runway probably in utility solar in a place like New Mexico. But consumers, you have to solve a problem here, which is churn. Finding those consumers that are going to pay their bill consistently and not create a lot of headaches for you, right? Because chasing payments is going to be friction and expensive.
Right.
And since you're offering a guarantee, it could also be costly. But let's talk a little bit about when you're approaching consumers, how do you select what consumers to approach, and then what is their experience? I'm very curious. I mean, I have my own experience as a consumer. I occasionally get inserts in my Ameren bill from from companies like Nexamp, and then I get text messages from friends and colleagues. Hey Tim, I got this notice about community solar. Is this real? So consumers are skeptical.
Yeah.
It sounds funky, right? Like,
right.
And on some level, I could see how people are a little reticent to have two power bills. Most states don't have on bill yet.
Correct.
So you are taking on an additional bill that you have to deal with, so to speak. But tell us a little bit about your perspective.
Yeah. I mean, those are definitely great points, Tim. It sounds too good to be true. That is real. You know, you just sign up here, here, and here, and the initials there, and you're going to save, again, 5, 10, 20% on your bill. Heck, the majority of our customers at Solar Simplified in Illinois are saving 50%.
Really?
From the Illinois Solar for All program.
Mm.
Over there, the minimum discount is 50%.
Right.
Because that's how the state designed that program.
So real quick, you mentioned Solar for All. That is a low income, low and middle income program. So it's a carve out. It's a sizable program, but it is a very niche market. But continue.
Correct. It's also a more risky market, to your point. It's harder to acquire those customers, harder to retain them because they move more often, they change their phone number more often. And it's obviously harder to collect payments from people who don't have a lot of money.
Right.
But to go back to your earlier point, you're definitely right that there's a bunch of markets, probably a handful. You were generous by saying 10. You know, from the 10... some of them are very small markets, to your earlier point.
Yeah.
So many of these markets unfortunately fluctuate. You know, some years are awesome years, other years are not as great because the incentives ran out or they're rethinking the policy or the regulation or stuff of that nature. But on the subscriber side, it's definitely confusing. You just sign here, 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 and you can save some money on your bill. Especially in deregulated markets. Now, I'm not an expert on deregulated markets, on what we call here in Illinois ARIES, but I know in some states it's called ESCOs or REPs. The retail energy providers who sell you a different supply portion on your bill. And unfortunately, a lot of people have gotten scammed by some of these companies. Now, that's an industry that's been around for decades. So people had gotten a bad taste, I think, from some of these folks. And now here we are, this new industry, community solar, coming in, basically saying the same stuff. Just fine here, 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 and we can help you save some money. Yes, the technology in the background's different, and this thing and that thing is different, but the pitch sounds almost the same. So it's definitely tricky. I can't give out the entire secret sauce, but we run a lot of data analytics on, let's call it, people's behavior online and trying to figure out what they're interested in, when are they interested in it, you know, kind of almost like I like to say that my two advertising companies were basically profiling companies, kind of like if you watch CSI or Profiler back in the day, trying to figure out people's behavior. I don't care about people's demographics, to be honest. Unless we're targeting something specifically socioeconomic, like LMI dedicated programs and stuff of that nature.
Right.
If it's a mass market program, in my opinion, everybody can and should sign up. So I don't care about that. I care more about who's going to be interested in this. Who should I show my ads to online? We, by the way, don't do door-to-door sales And I joke about this a lot with folks that we work with. I don't want anybody knocking on my door, so we're not knocking on anybody else's door. Mm-hmm. By the way, I don't want anybody cold calling me, so we don't cold call anybody, mm-hmm. you know? And those are kind of the two main methods of acquiring yeah. customers in this industry. I just don't like them. I don't want them to happen to me. So I'm not going to do them to anybody else.
So how do you acquire new customers?
So a lot of online marketing. We do retargeting through direct mail. So some people need to hold a piece of paper sometimes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But most of what we do is online.
Where would I see your advertisements?
You wouldn't see it on Facebook and Instagram, I can tell you that. It'll be in places where your mindset is more of a money mindset. You're thinking of your finances. It wouldn't be on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or stuff like that. Places where you clean your head. You know, most of the time, at least, you're not super serious. You know, so we're trying to find those places where people have a mindset of energy, of savings, renewables.
Where is that? Where is that? I'm just curious.
That's some of the secret sauce. Uh-oh, you know, there are websites. You know, I'll give you some examples of websites or apps we're not advertising in, but that would kind of be in this in this realm.
Okay,
I can put stuff in Wall Street Journal, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, there are ads on the WallStreetJournal.com or Forbes or stuff of that nature. And you see ads on the side, at the bottom, between screens, and all sorts of stuff like that. I could put ads there. I'm not, but I could put ads there. You know, next, let's call it to articles that talk about saving money, you know, or that talk about reducing your costs or how tough it is to live in today's world because, you know, inflation and everything. And when you're reading those articles, you would be in a mindset that if I show you something related to savings, you might be a little bit more inclined to click it or to read about it versus, you know, you're watching cat videos on YouTube. Your mindset, mm-hmm. even though you're the same person, just your mindset's different.
Sure.
At that point. And so we're trying to figure out, and it changes all the time. It's not like we have one website that we're always using. But, you know, that's kind of one approach that we're taking. The other approach that we've been taking, and that's one other thing that I've been, you know, doing back in my advertising days, is influencer marketing. But don't think of your Kim Kardashians of the world. Think mm-hmm. of your local loud neighbor. Some places have neighborhood HOAs or neighborhood boards, where there's a loud person that you trust. Mm-hmm. Could be a pastor, could be a rabbi, could be maybe a local politician, could be a business owner. Just everybody, you know, some places have those. We have it here in the neighborhood I live in Chicago. Just like the gathering coffee shop everybody goes to over the weekend. You know, and they go and chit chat and just schmooze and network, you know, within the small, you know, small community we have here in my side of the neighborhood. And so it could be a lot of different people. Every community has, let's call it like the local leaders, the people that, you know, people listen to, people talk to,
sure.
hear advice from. In many places, we partner with those people. It's hard to figure out who those people are. But again, that's kind of where data analytics comes from. Yeah. But
So then you're getting word of mouth. You're getting word of mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's local word of mouth from somebody you trust.
Yeah.
Well, suddenly the too good to be true paradigm goes away mm-hmm. because it sounds too good to be true, but a person you trust who lives right next door mm-hmm. told you that they've looked into it and it seems real. Like they're not going to vouch for it in anything. And we don't pay people to do this, by the way. So it's not like I'm, you know, not bribing anybody local to say, go say something, you know, but we approach these people. Sometimes we donate money on their behalf to a charity they want, but they don't get paid by us, mm-hmm. You know, to say it. But, you know, I'm happy to put in the time to explain to a local person who's a trustworthy leader in their community, mm-hmm. happy to spend an hour or two or three explaining to them what community solar is in their state, maybe connecting them toward the regulator to vouch that this is a real program and this is a real thing where they live. And suddenly they're like, okay, I'll sign up, I'll check it out. And because they are leaders in their community, their word of mouth is much stronger than, say, the average Joe.
Sure.
And so that's kind of another way that we're able to build that trust. And when people see community solar, when they've actually experienced it and they've seen the savings, churn is very, very low. Because once you see the savings, whether it's dual billing or consolidated billing, assuming it's not a dollar a month, like something that is substantial, you know, $8 a month, $10 a month, mm-hmm. $20 a month, et cetera, something that adds to, let's say, $100 and above a year. Mm-hmm. Well, that's substantial to many people, you know, saving $100 a year or $200 a year. Well, that's another, you know, another movie or two you can take your kids to with popcorn and drinks and everything.
Right.
That's not too bad. Now, nobody's going to get rich from saving a little bit of money on community solar.
So we have some ground to cover here, but are there other aspects of working with consumers that you want to speak to? And then let's talk about the utilities and how well they're playing ball or not.
I think the most important thing that at least that we're putting emphasis on internally at Solar Simplified is, what do we say to acquire the customers? So what's the messaging on these ads, the landing pages they get to? What are they seeing? What are they reading? In order to build that trust. Because if we're not building the trust, the too good to be true is going to be the best excuse why not to sign up. But more importantly, it's the onboarding experience. So once they've signed up, what happens? Who talks to them? What emails are they getting, or text messages or anything of that nature?
Yeah.
Can they talk to a real person? You know, everybody at Solar Simplified works for me. Everybody's a W-2. We don't have call centers or 1099s or anything of that nature. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I really care about the experience the subscriber's going through. Mm-hmm. And we all pick up the phones. You know, I pick up the phone a couple times a day if people are calling and, you know, my team's busy. I'll answer customer calls. You know, I'll answer customer emails because, you know, that's a part of the job.
Yeah. Well, it keeps you in touch with the experience too.
Of course. I think the onboarding experience is something that many in this industry are still struggling with or just still trying to figure it out. Not to say that I think we've figured it out yet, but I think many folks, unfortunately, I'm saying this, by the way, as a subscriber, not of my own company, because we're right now not serving any active projects in ComEd in Chicago. Mm. Most of our ComEd projects are still under construction. So I've signed up with some of my competitors. Not going to name names, obviously, but the onboarding is tough sometimes. And I'm from this industry, and it's tough for me. So just an average Joe, what would they think about our industry if, you know, everything is tough? I'll stop there probably on the subscriber. We can switch to talk about asset owners, developers, and anything else you want to talk about.
Yeah, the Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more. Yeah, well, we're going to talk about asset owners, but I also want to talk about the utilities, because the utilities, you know, the fundamental here is that you, as a consumer, subscribe to a program, okay, and then you're paying the bulk of your energy bill to the community solar provider, right? Mm-hmm. And then Ameren or ComEd here in Illinois is crediting you for that purchase that you've made with the community solar company. And how well is that working? And do consumers feel like it is an okay experience?
So unfortunately, the variance here is very, very wide. Some utilities are amazing around the country. The credits show up. They show up correctly. They show up on time. Mm-hmm. By the way, when you think of dual billing, at least with us, I can't speak to our competition, the subscriber gets the credits first. Then we bill them back for how much money they've received minus the discount. Mm-hmm. And so for the subscriber, at least on our end, it's a very simple scenario because they'll see the credits before we actually charge them money. I think with some utilities, though, it's been a struggle. You know, some utilities around the country, a good case scenario of bad performing utilities would be just that credits show up late. Mm-hmm. You know, 1 month you got zero, then the next month you got double.
Right.
You know, that would be a good case scenario. A worst case scenario happens with some utilities, you know, less than a handful that I've seen so far, but it does happen. Mm-hmm. And it is increasing as community solar expands and there's just more projects and more subscribers to service, you know, where credits just go missing. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst experience because if I'm being told by the utility that Tim received $100 on his bill, but Tim hasn't received $100 on his bill.
Yeah.
Well, that now is an issue.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, I can say for us, and there's a few other competitors out there that kind of come from the tech side and not necessarily from the marketing side. We're connected, you know, in various different ways to the utilities that we're able to see the bill, kind of confirm that it's there. Mm-hmm. But I can't say that it's 100% bulletproof. We don't have that with all of the utilities, and it's not, you know, it's not, nothing is perfect. Mm-hmm. And so there have been times, luckily very few, there have been times where, you know, we thought a subscriber received credits and they didn't. I think, you know, luckily we've fixed those issues and they have not happened probably in the last 2 or 3 years by now. That happened kind of 2020, 2021. But I've been on a lot of policy calls with regulators, with other industry leaders that are trying to drive policy forward, where I'm still hearing about some utilities that are, you know, struggling, where credits go missing. And you got a credit, and that credit got pulled from you, from the subscriber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody knew about it. So you got the credit. Then they canceled your bill, they rebilled you, or something had happened, they charged you back. And, you know, we have to get either the utilities to play ball and for the utilities to like us as an industry, or we have to get the regulators, which is the fourth entity you haven't mentioned previously, the regulators to force the utilities to work together with us. Now, I prefer the first approach.
Sure.
You know, some utilities are awesome. They understand why community solar is important, you know, just generally speaking, you know, also for them, you know, if they give out a good experience for community solar to the people in their utility territory, you know, it puts out a good name for them too. And if they're going to struggle, that puts up a bad name for them. Mm-hmm. And so I prefer the, you know, the carrot, not the stick.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, we could talk for a long time about utilities, but let's move on to asset owners. What is the asset owner's experience and why are asset owners engaging with Solar Simplified or transitioning to Solar Simplified in your experience?
So I think it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning with the challenges of working with some of my competitors. You know, you pay a lot of money up front, you keep paying more money for the acquisition, you keep paying more money for management, for churn replacement, for billing services, for this and for that, and you're still carrying the entire risk. With Solar Simplified, our offering is very, very simple. There is no upfront acquisition. We pay for that in-house. There's no churn replacement costs. We eat those costs ourselves. You pay a management fee. And inside that management fee, you get the acquisition, the churn replacement, and a full collection guarantee. So if we had a customer and they didn't pay their bill, we eat that loss. The asset owner, the developer, the lender, the tax equity. However, you know, all of these parties together, let's call it, are being shielded because we screwed up. We acquired the wrong customer. We acquired a customer who's not paying. that's a part of our fault. Mm-hmm. It was our job to acquire customers who are staying on the project and who are paying their bills. And so the offering is fairly simple. We shield them from our mess ups, from our screw ups. And I've had many folks who come over to us, you know, A, because they're interested. It's kind of one side to the industry. But B, we're getting a lot of folks to transition even existing projects over because their subscriber management company or the aggregator they're working with is just not pulling their weight. Churn is too high. Insurance replacement costs a lot of money. Bad debt is very high. People are not paying or people are paying very late. Mm-hmm. Heck, even utilities are not paying it many times. I mean, we've seen this in New York since 2021, where some of the utilities, it's, you know, it was the holy grail, utility consolidated billing with net crediting, which only New York right now offers. So the utility takes the credit risk if the subscriber is not paying. And yet, the utilities were not paying developers. I mean, I know of at least three developers, developers slash small asset owners, let's call it, who went under, literally declared bankruptcy in New York State because they did not get the money for months and months and months. And they have lenders and they have tax equity and they have debt and they have things that they need to pay this money to.
You use this expression. Bill consolidation, right? Which means that the consumer is then just receiving their regular utility bill, say from Ameren or ComEd here in Illinois. And then they're paying the bill, and then, but a portion of that bill needs to go to the asset owner.
Correct.
Yeah. And
so the way that utility consolidated billing works is that instead of you getting a credit for $100 or a negative, let's say $100 for simplicity's sake, you know, maybe your bill was $200 this month and your community solar provider has given you $100 worth of credits. So what you're going to have to do is pay the utility $100, right? 200 minus 100. Well, in consolidated billing, you'll see, let's say it's a 10% discount project, you'll see minus 100 plus 90. Mm-hmm. And that 90 minus some small utility fee, let's say it's $1, for example. So $89 will come to the asset owner or to us on behalf of the asset owner. You know, that's in consolidated billing. In non-consolidated billing and dual billing, you're going to get your $100 and I'm going to have to send you a separate bill for 90. You know, that's the difference between dual billing and consolidated billing. Now, in New York, there's a third option called net crediting. Net crediting, unlike consolidated billing is just about putting the plus 90 back on your bill. It doesn't mean anything in terms of payments. Okay. Let's say you haven't paid the utilities here in Ameren or in ComEd. You know, you live in Ameren, so we'll take Ameren as an example. If you sign up to a community solar project tomorrow morning in Ameren and you haven't paid your utility bill that month, the community solar asset owner is not getting paid. The utility gets paid first. So if you paid your bill partly, you know, partially, you only paid half of it or something like that, community solar is the last entity that gets paid in ComEd, in Ameren, in ComEd, in many states, by the way. New York is the only state where you have net crediting, where the utilities take that risk of payment and the asset owners are shielded from it. It was supposed to be the holy grail of this industry. I'll tell you what, we're 2.5 years, almost 3 years into net crediting utility consolidated billing in New York, that holy grail. You know what? There's still utilities that are not paying for 6, 9, even 12 months of credits. So the project exists. Subscribers are waiting for their credits. The asset owner is waiting for their payments. Everybody's waiting for the utilities. It's just insane. It doesn't happen with all of the utilities. I don't want to generalize, but it does happen with more than one. And that's just insane. So we shield our developers and our asset owners from this. We take that risk on us and we go and fight the utilities to get paid.
You're a brave man. That sounds like a nightmare.
Fighting with utilities is a nightmare. Yeah, that is true. But it doesn't happen, you know, at least for us, that we're in multiple states with multiple utilities and multiple regulators. There's a safety net in diversification. If I was only working in one utility in one state and had a lot of projects, that would have been a huge risk for me. If that utility is not paying or something happens, they screw up the credits or just something bad happens, I would have been probably out of business. But we're in, I don't know, a dozen utilities across multiple states, maybe more than a dozen. It's fine. Yeah. You know,
how many states are you working in?
So live projects right now, not talking about anything under construction, stuff like that. We're in four states. We're in New York and Illinois, New Jersey and Maine.
Okay.
But we have, you know, late stage development, from some of our partners or projects under construction that are signed with us in, you know, in California, in the old program that's unfortunately getting deprecated, more projects here in Illinois, Maryland and Delaware,
four is about to go to eight or something like that.
Massachusetts. It's probably four operating maybe by the end of this year or early 2025 should become, you know, 10 to 12 states, something of that nature.
Yeah.
But that kind of depends also on construction timelines and supply chain issues and many things that I can't control.
Sure.
You know, how fast people are building.
Yeah. What, in our last few minutes here, we have to wrap up, Aviv, but what do you say to companies thinking about becoming community solar developers or asset owners? What is your big picture take on the industry in the United States?
I think it's a great industry. I think it's an industry that's going to grow, going to double, triple, quadruple, you know, in a very short time frame. I mean, I'm foreseeing, let's say, in the next 10 years, you know, at least a 10x nationwide, if not more. Mm-hmm. I mean, even just from the existing states, so the existing programs, not talking about the pilot programs in this state or in that state, I'm talking about just the existing states are talking about double, tripling, you know, the size of community solar that's out there right now. If we get more states coming in, which we are getting, we're probably going to see, you know, I'm assuming a 5 to 10x at least in the next 5 to 10 years, if not more. The nice thing about this industry, it's state regulated. One state, you know, we talked about diversification a few minutes ago. If one state doesn't go the right way, kind of like what we've seen in California just last week, that unfortunately did not pass the community solar program that many advocates were rooting for. But there's a lot of other states that are talking about this. And so if one state, you know, takes a little bit longer, well, another state's going to pick up the slack.
Sure.
And I think it's going to be a huge industry. But you do need to have thick skin. It's a tough industry to work in. There's a lot of NIMBYs out there. If you're a developer, people who don't want this in their backyard, you know, to be built, they don't want to look at it. You know, there's utilities sometimes that just don't want this in their backyard. There's different regulators you're going to have to work with. So you need to have a little bit of a thick skin. I think the other thing that people need to be at least aware of, I wouldn't say concerned about, but aware of, many, many regulators are pushing more of these programs into the low and moderate income brackets. You know, Illinois has just separate programs. There's the mass market program called the adjustable block, and there's the low income called the solar for all. But in some of the other states, it's not that clear cut.
Sure.
You know, where exactly the wind's blowing. And some states are even saying, well, there's not going to be a mass market anymore, or we're going to force you to do 20%, 40%, 50% low income. The rest of it, you can do whatever you want.
What prevents the utility from just becoming the solar simplified?
First of all, in some states, they are trying. You know, New York is a state where the utilities are trying to push back against the opt-in community solar program and just say, I'm just going to take it and spread all of the credits across, you know, all of our subscribers, maybe all of our low-income subscribers, for example. Yeah. You know, and the question is, A, do they want to deal with that? Many utilities just don't want to deal with this at all. You know, they don't want to deal with the credits. They deal with, they give the credits to subscribers because they have to, because the regulators told them to, but they don't want to deal with this. Yeah. They want to be in charge of the transmission lines and the meters and stuff of that nature. They want to get paid for that. They don't want to get paid for, or at least they don't want to handle all the customer complaints and the customer questions and stuff of that nature. But yes, some utilities want to do this. I would push back, as I have been very vocal in many of these policy talks, in some states that where this has come up, where it's kind of the opt-in versus opt-out. The idea, the premise of community solar 10, 12 years ago, was we want to democratize solar, democratize renewable energy. We want to let people vote with their, you know, with their feet, let's call it, with their wallet.
Sure.
And the opt-out that some of the utilities are offering, while that is, you know, that might make things a little bit simpler, it also takes away the entire voice of the subscribers, the consumers that end up signing up for these things. And it's also going to, like, nobody's going to notice this. If you're getting a, you know, a 2 cent discount on your bill, it's, you know, nobody's going to pay attention to it. As a consumer, I wouldn't pay attention to it. And I get today, even in ComEd, there's multiple line items on my bill that say negative 2 cents here, negative 5 cents there. Like, okay. Yep.
Okay.
You know, somebody figured out something.
All right. Well, that's all we have time for. I'm sorry. I really appreciate this conversation, though, Aviv. It adds a lot of color to what's going on with community solar. And there, it's two sides. There's challenges and opportunities. And clearly, there is a big opportunity. So thank you. Check out all of our content at cleanpowerhour.com. Tell a friend about the show. That's the best way that you can help the show grow. And reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love connecting with my listeners. Aviv, how can our listeners connect with you?
So solarsimplify.com. If you want to talk to me directly, aviv@solarsimplify.com. And my LinkedIn, I'm always available to talk to anybody in the industry. I'm happy to talk policy and, you know, and how things are changing and markets and different things of that nature. And my door is always open. Email or website or LinkedIn are probably the best. Thank you for having me, Tim.
Thank you, Aviv Shalgi with Solar Simplified. I'm Tim Montague. Let's grow solar and storage. Take care. Hey, listeners. This is Tim. I want to give a shout out to all of you. I do this for you twice a week. Thank you for being here. Thank you for giving us your time. I really appreciate you and what you're all about. You are part and parcel of the energy transition, whether you're an energy professional today or an aspiring energy professional. So thank you. I want to let you know that the Clean Power Hour has launched a listener survey, and it would mean so much to me if you would go to cleanpowerhour.com, click on the About Us link right there on the main navigation that takes you to the About page, and you'll see a big graphic, listener survey. Just click on that graphic, and it takes just a couple of minutes. If you fill out the survey, I will send you a lovely baseball cap with our logo on it. The other thing I want our listeners to know is that this podcast is made possible by corporate sponsors. We have Chin Power Systems, the leading three-phase string inverter manufacturer in North America. So check out CPS America. But we are very actively looking for additional support to make this show work. And you see here our media kit with all the sponsor benefits and statistics about the show. You know, we're dropping two episodes a week. We have now over 320,000 downloads on YouTube, and we're getting about 45,000 downloads per month. So this is a great way to bring your brand to our listeners. And our listeners are decision makers in clean energy. This includes project executives, engineers, finance, project management, and many other professionals who are making decisions about and developing, designing, installing, and making possible clean energy projects. So check out cleanpowerhour.com, both our listener survey on the About Us and our media kit, and become a sponsor today. Thank you so much. Let's grow solar and storage. The Clean Power Hour is brought to you by CPS America, the maker of North America's number one three-phase string inverter, with over 6 gigawatts shipped in the U.S. The CPS America product lineup includes three-phase string inverters ranging from 25 to 275 kW. Their flagship inverter, the CPS250-275, is designed to work with solar plants ranging from 2 megawatts to 2 gigawatts. The 250-275 pairs well with CPS America's exceptional data communication, controls, and energy storage solutions. Go to chintpowersystems.com to find out more.